we should consider the role of Sheikh Shaltoub.
Yes.
May
yes.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bless him.
Yes.
Because he had also this mindset that Muslim Ummah must collect together and be united.
That's all right.
This was also really important at that time.
This is true. I think that if the Muslims are united in the true sense of the word, the voice of Islam can reach the far lands of the Western world, as you could see in the case of Muhammad Jawad Sherry. You know, he reached the U.S., the Detroit, Dearborn, and Michigan over there, and is still a source of benefit for so many Muslims over there. Muhammad Jawad Sherry has some compilations too, Sheikh Mahtavi. What are they?
Yeah, definitely. If you wanted to look at his books and his works, we see that nature of unity among Muslim Ummah even being reflected in his works as well. So in his books, we can see Al-Khilafa fi al-Dastur al-Islami, Caliphate in the Islamic Constitution. And again, we have Imam Ali, the brother of Prophet Muhammad.
Yes.
So we see he is trying to unify these two sects,
yes,
Shia and Sunni. Even these type of thinking is reflected in his works. Again, we have Shia and wrong accusations.
Mm-hmm.
This is also because of misunderstanding here and there,
yes,
by our Sunni brothers about what Shia are thinking and practicing as Islam, sometimes made them to have a prejudgment,
yes,
about Shiism. So this kind of activities reflects that open soul that was trying and striving,
yes,
to implement unity among the Ummah.
That's all right. It's really great, you know, from the side of all the scholars now. Really, you know, sometimes these trivial points makes the Muslims separate from each other. And this is the best chance for the enemy of Islam to abuse the segregation, you know, and, you know, by putting seditions among the Muslims all around the world. And sometimes the problem is from the side of the Muslims too, being trapped by the tricks of the enemy, especially on the unity and especially on the cases which are so many. I mean, there's so many commonalities that exist between the Muslims all around the world. Thank you very much, Sheikh Mahtavi and Sheikh Ziaunia, for your nice elaboration on Sheikh Muhammad Jawad Sherry, the outstanding Lebanese cleric who spent most of his life in the U.S. With establishing the Islamic Center of the U.S. in Dearborn, Michigan, and preaching the School of Thought of the Ahl al-Bayt, or the Jafariya School of Thought, and the connections and the dialogues that he had with Sheikh Shaltoub in Al-Azhar. It was very kind of you, Sheikh Mahtavi.
You are most welcome.
And Sheikh Ziaunia.
You are most welcome, and thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher, which was about Sheikh Muhammad Jawad Sherry. For more information on this program and our previous discussions, you can visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, also our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. Till another episode and introducing another Shiite dignitary, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
The Shaheed,
Part 6.
Within 2 months of the martyrdom of Haj Qasim, I was invited to an anti-US conference in Caracas, Venezuela. When I opened the posters and banners of Haj Qasim, I was flabbergasted by the response of the people there. Almost everybody had at least heard his name. Soon, all the sessions of the conference were adorned with the pictures of the Shaheed. On the last day of our visit, a solidarity gathering was held for the people of Iran to condole the martyrdom of Qasim Soleimani in one of the main squares of Caracas. At the end of the ceremony, a native Venezuelan woman started performing a sad song, and I only understood one word from her song: Soleimani.
I'm Sarbazullah Rizvi, and in this episode of The Shaheed, we will examine the resonance of efforts made by Shaheed Soleimani miles apart in Latin America. Stay tuned. Venezuelan Palestinian writer and analyst, Susana Khalil. Susana Khalil, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Recently, President Maduro had an interview with Al Mayadeen where he said about the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani. He said, Is this really a world we want where the White House issues an order to kill a hero of the struggle against terrorism in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon? So some may ask, Susana Khalil, some may ask that how the martyrdom of Shaheed Soleimani, a man who was involved in the issues of West Asia, is being, you know, echoed or, you know, reflected in South America and Latin American region, which is thousands of miles away.
Yes, but before to answer that, I would like to say that the USA assassination of the General Qasem Soleimani and the Commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandi was because these two men together succeed or advance in combating the nefarious terrorism. To give you one example, in Syria. And the assassination of Soleimani is a victory for pseudo or fake Islamic terrorists coordinated by the West and Gulf tyrannies such as Saudi Arabia and the other Arab regimes and the Turkish government. I would like to mention that the Western world find it hard to believe that the fascist, the fake Islamic group are largely the creation of the West, where the first victim are Muslim and the first who fight them are Muslim themselves. And I will be brief today. Today, the big fighter in the world of Islamic fascism, the false Islam, are Iran, Hezbollah, Russia and Syria. No doubt about that. General Soleimani, he believes in local popular groups to fight terrorism. I mean the people, the same people who yes. are in coordination to how to fight the terrorism. And I would now also to talk concerning Latin America, the effect of the consequences in Latin America. It's definitely we as a Latin American we feel that it's not something bizarre. It's not something far from Latin America. We know that this is a crime made. Even we see it as a logic, but which logic? Of imperialism logic, of a fascist logic. Is in Latin America. The people see this assassination like a crime, but which is normal in this imperialistic reality. We are in the 21st century, and we are still talking about imperialism, colonialism, and this is the real fascism, the main fascism of our time. So, in Latin America, concerning the martyr, Soleimani martyr, this is for in Latin America is the same like in the Arab world, on the Persian world, Persian world. They say he was a victim of freedom. He was victim of terrorism. He is victim because he is fighting for sovereignty. He is fighting for freedom. He is fighting for this fascist order, international order, which is the case.
Now let me ask one question. You talked about Latin America and how the martyrdom of Shaheed Soleimani is connected to the people in Latin America, and also I know that, and also I know that you have a Palestinian background as well,
And Palestine is a victim of neoliberalism, actually. The Palestinian people and the Palestinian cause is actually as a result of the neoliberalism. So how do you find the contribution of General Qasem Soleimani to particularly the Palestinian cause?
Okay, in Latin America, the assassination and the even the trajectory of Soleimani is an inspiration. This is a human being that is a human of respect, loyalty, and he is a martyr of this fascist international system. And I'm talking about Latin America. And as a Palestinian, we have a huge respect for this determination, this brave determination of this man who is fighting against the imperialism. I insist with the term imperialism because many people want to talk about freedom, justice, human rights, democracy, but they avoid the reality of imperialism. This is a big hypocrisy when we talk about even women's rights and we don't talk about the reality of imperialism. The biggest violation of human rights is come from the reality of this retrograde reality of imperialism. And the position of the Iran concerning Palestine, because how come we are in the 21st century and that we are still supporting colonialism? Israel is a classic colonialism. This regime is a colonial regime. It's a classic colonialism, and we cannot accept it in our time, in our history, in our mind, in our spirit, in our freedom, in our awareness of justice. Mm-hmm. As a Palestinian, we have to continue and to support this kind of position, brave position, honest position against imperialism, against the colonialism. This is anachronism today in the 21st century. At the same time, Iran is paying a huge price for have this moral, ethical, and honest position for justice. Because the Palestinian people are fighting, there's a native people who are fighting a colonizer, Europe colonization.
Exactly.
And Iran is the, I can't say Iran and Syria is the main supporter now for Palestinian cause, for Palestinian liberation, liberation from colonialism, which is a retrograde reality in our time.
Yes.
How come we are in the 21st century and that we are still talking about colonialism?
Yeah.
No way. We have it's impossible to erase and to hide the colonial reality, which is the natural of the what they call the state of Israel.
Okay, I will continue my talk with Susanna Khalil after the reflection of this criminal assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis by Americans in the Latin American context.
The General Soleimani assassination in Latin America and the Spanish language press had a flavor of its own, as was the case with any other region of the world. Also, the spices grew sharper or milder from one Latino country to another. But what you may find funny, angering, and bewildering all at once is the tone the American press and Zionist lobby took towards Soleimani's martyrdom in relation to Latin America. They wasted no time in drawing on old cases to turn the media tide against Iran. The Wall Street Journal actually said that Latin America should be thanking Trump for assassinating Soleimani. The article focuses more than anything on the AMIA bombing in Argentina and the death of the AMIA case prosecutor that followed, the prosecutor being Alberto Nisman. The article paints such a dark picture of the suicide van bomb attack on the Argentine-Israel Mutual Association, or AMIA, building in Buenos Aires, Argentina in 1994 that it diminishes the gravity of the Soleimani assassination. It even justifies it. Even what good relations Iran and Latin American countries share, the article undermines as solely security and military based. It paints the governments of Cuba, Venezuela, and Bolivia as oppressive governments that would, of course, receive backing from the likes of Iran. But actually, no one could have dealt the region a greater socio-political blow than the U.S. with its numerous sanctions and coup d'etats imposed on Latin American countries. One of the most important articles on the matter was by the Protect United States Democracies Foundation. The article was published for the anniversary of the assassination and dedicated a good portion to cultural centers' activities in Brazil. One center being the Al Mustafa University, which had recently been put on America's blacklist of the sanctions. And so, just its name coming up implied shady activity and sabotage. Now, Argentine's Infobae news agency is connected to the Zionist lobby and is big on following up on the Amia case. And so it published all dark matter coming from American and Zionist lobby press within a framework of its own to create a new wave of support for the U.S. act of state terrorism. It even criticized Venezuela and Cuba for their expression of sympathy right after the general was murdered. Words matter, and a supposedly moderate Spanish tone on both sides of the pond adopted words like matar to water down the assassination by calling it a kill. BBC Spanish was one to do so. Now, politicians in power, the press, and people don't always have the same attitudes to a kill or assassination. But only one Latin American leader expressed satisfaction at the assassination of General Soleimani. That was Jair Bolsonaro, the Brazilian president who came to power thanks to a coalition of far-right Brazilian parties. Of course, former President Lula da Silva quickly condemned Bolsonaro as a lackey of Trump. The most positive Latin response came from Venezuela. Each of its dignitaries reacted to the American act of assassination right in the early days following the act. Nicolas Maduro, the then president's government, condemned the assassination as news of it broke out. His foreign minister Jorge Arreaza and other dignitaries visited the Iranian embassy to sign the martyred General Soleimani memorial. One of them, the then National Constituent Assembly chief, at a ceremony with representatives from different countries, called for a standing ovation for the martyred Iranian general. Come the anniversary of the assassination, in the capital Caracas and Venezuela at large, different ceremonies were held for a week with the people participating. And Nicolas Maduro recalled the many assassinations by America. Some other countries sympathizing with Iran and condemning America were Ecuador, whose then President Correa declared that America had committed an act of terror by murdering General Soleimani. Bolivia's then President Evo Morales tweeted that the fight against imperialism had its heroes and martyrs, such as Commander Qasem Soleimani, and that people recognized their fight for justice. The Nicaraguan government and Cuban Foreign Minister Rodriguez also condemned the assassination of Soleimani. Nicaragua invited the world to peace at the same time. In Peru, Muslim and Christian activists gathered in the capital Lima. Demonstrators chanted, "No to imperialist wars, Yankee, go home." As for a most important cultural measure taken in Latin America, that will be the publishing of the book My Uncle Soleimani by El Faro International Publishing House. It was printed in Colombia, Venezuela, and Ecuador for teenagers everywhere in Latin America. Written in simple language, it turned out popular and came to a third printing in some areas.
I'm hosting Susana Khalil, a Palestinian Venezuelan writer and analyst. Susana Khalil, one of the main issues currently we are facing in the West Asian region is the issue of normalization of the ties of some Arab and Muslim countries with Zionist regime. Some of the regimes of the region are normalizing their ties with the Zionist regime. What's your stand on that, and how do you analyze that?
The normalization of the Arab tyranny is not the normalization. This is a betray to the Palestinian cause, and also this is a risk that they are taking even for them in the future for their own sovereignty, because this colonialism is not limited to only to Palestine. The Zionist movement, they say, is not only Palestine to belong to them. They say that even the old Arab world belongs to them. So this is because we are, this is a betray. But the betray against the Palestinian cause, and that this is normalization with colonialism, with fascism, normalization with imperialism, normalization with the right wing. This is a normalization with the violence against the human rights. This is the normalization with the crime. This is normalization with an unfair injustice, and this is normalization against humanity, and this is a betray, not only with the Palestinian cause. It's a betray to Persian, to Iranian, to all the whole humanity, to all hope even. This is the normalization with fascism. And I think even it's going to be a risk, I insist with that, for themselves, for the sovereignty of their own country. Because colonialism is expansionist. They say that it's not only exactly. Palestine who belongs to them, it's
the whole region.
The Middle East also. This is a risk. To make a normalization with them is like you're gonna be the next to be part of this colonial expansionist
exactly.
Regime, this is a very sad situation, which is not new. But we are in the historic moment that we have several allies. For example, we can see the support from Syria, from Persia, from Iran, even the situation of a multipolar international order like China, Russia, even Latin America, the left-wing progressist movement that they have awareness about people, culture, and justice and freedom. So I think they're gonna collapse. But
yeah.
Definitely, we don't have to mix people with the policy of their government
exactly.
or the
of course.
Tyranny.
Exactly.
No, I know that, for example, the case of Morocco, the people of Morocco, they are clear that they support the Palestinian cause,
yeah.
Palestinian liberation,
yeah.
and that we doesn't mean it's they support their own tyrant, the king
yeah.
of Morocco, which is allied to the Zionism, to Zionists and the imperialists. That's why he is there in this power, and we have to continue to struggle, and we can see, for example, the example of. General Soleimani and the commander Abu Mahdi, all together with determination, with the brave character, spirit, mind. This is a school that we have to take it, and this is a great
Indeed.
Example of dignity that we have. And Soleimani is a symbol, is an inspiration, is a determination, is a clear example of a struggle against imperialism, against the colonialism. I say in colonialism, a classic colonialism that Palestinian native are facing in our time. We are talking about 21st century.
Exactly.
And this is an anachronism that
exactly.
we are
Thank
fighting.
You.
And this fight, it doesn't belong only to Palestinians, it belongs to the whole world. And we say that the Palestinians have to be liberated. All Palestine, the historic
let's
Palestine.
Hope for that.
We have
let's
a day with history, and we have a depth with humanity. The liberation of Palestine is the liberation of the world. That's why when those tyranny and the Emirati, for example, they talk about normalization with the colonial regime of Israel, this is normalization with fascism, this is normalization with colonialism, this is a normalization
exactly.
with the imperialism, this is a normalization against humanity.
Thank you, Susanna, for being with us, and thank you for accepting our invitation. Thank you.
Thanks to you.
Yes, this was my interview with Susana Khalil, the Venezuelan-Palestinian writer and analyst. Let's shift to the next part of our program, The Shaheed, which is about the devotion of General Qasem Soleimani to Imam Khomeini as the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran and his successor, Imam Khomeini. Stay with us.
By the Soleimani school of thought, we mean a branch of the Imam's thinking. Because General Soleimani's outlook was based on that of the founder of the Islamic Revolution. That is why the present leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, in January 2020, said in his condolence message on the martyrdom of Qasem Soleimani, "He is a prominent example of the students of Islam and the Imam Khomeini school." He himself writes in his will, as someone influenced by the late Imam since adolescence, "The art of Dear Khomeini was that he first brought Islam to back up Iran and then set Iran on a path of serving Islam. Had it not been for Islam and the Islamic spirit of this nation, Saddam would have ripped this country apart like a wild wolf. America would have done the same like a rabid dog. But the Imam artfully brought Islam to the nation's rescue, together with Ashura and Muharram, Safar and Fatimiyya mourning days. He created revolutions within a revolution. That is why in every period, thousands have been willing to sacrifice their lives to shield you and the nation and Iran and Islam, and have brought the greatest materialist powers to their knees. Qasem Soleimani, under the influence of Imam Khomeini, fell in the path of revolutionary protest in teenagehood. And after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, he joined the IRGC force, the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. To his last breath, he put in every effort to help the ideas of the two successive leaders of the revolution materialize. He saw Ayatollah Khamenei as the most similar case to Imam Khomeini, finding no one with such resemblance within clerics anywhere in the world of Islam. He even recommended him in his will. "This scholar, Dear Khamenei, knowledgeable and humble in religion, fiqh or Islamic jurisprudence, and mysticism, hold close to your hearts." He feared if the enemy destroys the Islamic revolution, nothing will be left of Islam, and society will be dragged to full atheism. And so he wrote to religious scholars, "Your soldier has seen from the watchtower that if the system sees harm, the religion and values you have striven for in religious schools will disappear. This era is different from any other era. This time, if they get a hold of affairs, nothing will be left of Islam. The right way is to defend the revolution, the Islamic Republic, and the leader with no considerations."
The slogan and the demand of the people from Afghanistan to Iraq and from Iraq to Latin America has been the same and very simple. Yankee, go home. Thank you for being with this episode of The Shaheed. Stay tuned. Wassalam.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Please stay tuned.
آیه رو تابلو کنیم، بزنیم توی منازل و خانه‌هامون، دلو چشمون ببینیم.
الله in the holy Quran surah An-Najm ayahs 36 to 41 states, has he not been informed of what is in the scriptures of Moses and of Abraham who fulfilled his summons, that no bearer shall bear another's burden, and that nothing belongs to man except what he strives for, and that he will soon be shown his endeavor. Then he will be rewarded for it with the fullest reward. We must have this ayah always in our mind because it is very rich in content. In this ayah, we are informed of three pieces of news which are all approved by prophets of Allah, namely Moses, Abraham, and Muhammad. Now, what are these three concepts which are emphasized by Allah?
انسان در گرو تلاش خودش، یک، دو.
One of them is that everyone is responsible for his or her own deeds, and no one can shoulder the burden of another person. This means that in the other world, you are accountable for what you did in this world. The second point is that one must attempt in his life in order to reach his belongings, which mean that you should work hard to fulfill your desires. And the third one is that in the other world, everyone is shown the result of his action in this world. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care.
With you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
Participation of the United States in the endless wars has turned them into terrorists, says Robert Kohler, journalist, in an article titled "Americans Poisoning Themselves with War." Stay tuned for more. War spews hell in all directions. Just ask the guys at Talon Anvil, a secret U.S. strike cell recently exposed by the New York Times as a unit with a reputation for ignoring the rules of engagement and killing lots and lots of civilians with drone strikes. Part of the problem, a source told the Times, is that the daily demands of overseeing a strike after strike seem to erode operators' perspective and fray their humanity. In other words, participating in the endless U.S. war turned them into terrorists. Early one morning, as a Predator drone circled over the Syrian farming town of Karma, the operators focused on a particular building that they decided, with virtually no evidence, was an enemy training center, and dropped a 500-pound bomb through the roof. As the smoke cleared, a former officer told the Times, his team stared at their screens in dismay. The infrared cameras showed women and children staggering out of the partly collapsed building, some missing limbs, some dragging the dead. The intelligence analyst began taking screenshots and tallying the casualties. They sent an initial battle damage assessment to the Talon Anvil. 23 dead or severely wounded, 30 likely wounded, very likely civilians. Talon Anvil paused only long enough to acknowledge the message, the former officer said, then pressed on to the next target. The frayed humanity, here's what did not occur. The operators looking at what they had just done from the viewpoint of the victims. They would have amounted to more than simply dismay. Doing so is almost incomprehensible. Imagine a bomb suddenly piercing your roof in the middle of the night. Imagine your children suddenly dead, your arm or leg missing. My point here is that war is a collective enterprise. Multiply this incident by the size of the U.S. military budget. Virtually the half the country's discretionary spending, around $1 trillion annually all told. And the money is always there, ready and waiting for the security state to consume. The unending lie is that it keeps Americans safe. Imagine, once again, women and children staggering out of the partly collapsed building, some missing limbs, some dragging the dead, and savor the safety you now have. William Astor, pondering the defense budget's endless growth despite the collapse of official Cold War enemy 3 decades ago, asks, why then does each year's National Defense Authorization Act rise ever higher into the troposphere, drifting on the wind and poisoning our culture with militarism? Because, to state the obvious, U.S. Congress would rather engage in pork barrel spending than exercise the slightest real oversight when it comes to the national security state. The key words may well be these: poisoning the U.S. culture with militarism. When the U.S. wages war, they dehumanize, then kill a specific segment of humanity. In the process, they fray their own humanity. They become less human themselves. and thus more in sync with the evil they claim to be obliterating. This is what's happening to them right now. How is their culture being poisoned? One obvious way is the rate of wet suicides, around 60,000 in the last decade. And of course, there is the pretend militarism of lust and armed souls who have made mass murder a recurring aspect of the daily news flow. And in hate crimes, add in the prison industrial complex. The prison industry in the United States is massive and growing. According to the American Friends Service Committee, since 1970, the number of incarcerated people in the U.S. has increased by 700% to the point that the U.S. prison population is the largest in the world, both per capita and in total numbers. As of 2019, there are an estimated 2.3 million people behind bars and 4.5 million people on probation or parole. The estimated cost of the U.S. mass incarceration system is $182 billion a year, with hundreds of private companies competing for government contracts. Now consider this observation by Paul Tritzler on just one of late-in-game the Second World War bombing campaigns. In March of 1945, he writes, "Seemingly endless waves of B-29s roared across Tokyo, dropping 1 million bombs containing 2,000 tons of incendiaries. In under 3 hours, over 100,000 people lay dead and 1 million were homeless. The firebombing of 67 cities over the following 5 months resulted in the further death of at least 500,000 people. A deliberate policy of wiping out civilians living in the densely populated poorer districts. With no remorse, U.S. Air Force General Curtis LeMay openly declared they were scorched and boiled and baked to death. Although it didn't dampen their enthusiasm, bomber crews said the stench of burning flesh rose high into the air, forcing them to use oxygen masks to keep from vomiting. At the end of that 5 month period came atomic destruction. This is not about the blame. And this is not about the shame. This is about change. And still, Americans have their finger on the nuclear trigger.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami.
A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. Similar to the other topics where we have spoken about social justice, social awareness, if we don't have this element of practice in our lives, then there is no such thing as social justice or social awareness. And that is to be individually and collectively responsible for the betterment of our society. And that can only be done by us encouraging good to be performed and by blocking and stopping and deterring bad to be practiced. And this is what we call in Islam al-amr bil ma'roof wal nahi anil munkar. The sad thing in our individualized society today is because there's so much fear-mongering, no one is willing to help anyone else. And that's why, you know, they say that a tactic, the best tactic for you to use if you are in trouble, is never to scream out, I'm being raped. You know, they always use this example, and, you know, this isn't something that I say. This is something that is very commonly said, frequently said in today's modern society. Scream out fire, you will get that attention. If you scream out something like help me or something like that, you won't get that attention. And the only reason why, if you do scream out something like fire, is because they're not going to be worried about you, they're going to be worried about themselves being burnt. And it is very sad and devastating that so much of us turn a blind eye against dhulm, against people being wronged, against sin, and against social injustice, against moral degradation. These are things that we really need to stand up for, you know, and that's Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahi anil Munkar. It says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, يَجِدُونَهُ مَكْتُوبًا عِنْدَهُمْ. They find it written in their holy books, in their scriptures, in Al-Tawrat, in Al-Injil. يَأْمُرُهُمْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَيَنْهَاهُمْ عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ. Then you have another ayah where Luqman alayhi salam says, Ya Bunay, says to his son, Ya Bunay, أَقِمَ الصَّلَاةِ, uphold and value salah. وَأَمُرْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ, do أَمُرْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. وَنْهَا عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ, and forbid the wrong. وَصْبِرْ عَلَى مَا أَصَابَكَ, and be patient towards that which is inflicting you. إِنَّ ذَلِكَ مِنْ عَزْمِ الْأُمُورِ. Another ayah, وَلْتَكُنْ مِنْكُمْ أُمَّةٌ يَدُعُونَ إِلَى الْخَيْرِ وَيَأْمُرُونَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَيَنْهَوْنَ عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ. Another ayah, كُنْتُمْ خَيْرَ أُمَّةٍ, you were the best ummah, أخرجت للناس, that has been introduced to the people. تأمرون بالمعروف, you enjoin the goods. وتنهون عن المنكر, and you forbid the wrong. وتؤمنون بالله, and you believe in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So these two acts of الأمر بالمعروف والنهي عن المنكر are among the most important acts when it comes to the application not only of religion, but also for the establishment of social justice as well.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است چه فرون دماغ و صاحب داره فرون روزون است.
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اینه که فرون درخت کاری رو کم صاحب داره, دعا هم داره, ثواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام همونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری میوه ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree.
محیط زیست نگه سالم نگه داره این دو قلت ثواب داره.
There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
وقتی میخوای کشاورزی کنی یه قدر گندم بگیر رو به قبله بیست این دعا رو بخون اینم همون امام گفته دیگه.
When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned.
تو نظام اسلامی این جلد دوم جاش خالی.
We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Along with the verses in the Holy Quran that have been mentioned about Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahi anil Munkar, there are so many ahadith that speak about al-amr bil-ma'roof wal-nahi anil munkar. Imam al-Baqir salamullahi alayhi, he says, "Inna al-amr bil-ma'roof wal-nahi anil munkar sabilu al-anbiya." It's the path. Amr bil-ma'roof wal-nahi anil munkar is the path of the prophets, is the method of the sulaha, of the righteous. Wa min hajul sulaha fariidatun azimatun biha tuqamu al-fara'id wa ta'manu al-madhhab wa tahillu al-makasib, etc., etc. So it's something that pretty much constitutes the very foundation of your religion, of your social welfare, and most importantly, it is sabilul anbiya, the path of the prophets, and the minhaj al-sulaha, and the methodology of the righteous. Imam al-Kadhim salamullahi alayhi, he says, this is one of the signs of a true Shi'i. If you want to be a true Shi'i, then you are someone who does amr bil ma'roof wa nahi anil munkar. Does amr bil ma'roof wa nahi anil munkar. Imam al-Kadhim salamullahi alayhi, he says, وَقَدْ كَانَ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَآلِهِ يَتَخَتَّمُ بِيَمِينِهِ. The Holy Prophet would wear a ring on his right hand. That's alamatul mu'min, as we know. Al-takhattum bil-yameen. وَهُوَ عَلَامَةٌ لِشِيعَتِنَا يُعْرَفُونَ بِهِ. And Imam al-Kadhim salamullahi alayhi says, and it is al-takhattum bil-yameen. It is a sign for our Shia that they are distinguished, that a Shi'i is known by. وَالْمُحَافَظَ عَلَىٰ أَوْقَاتِ الصَّلَاةِ, and that you preserve, and that you respect, and that you are vigilant in making sure that you are someone who observes the timing of salah. وَإِيْتَاءُ الزَّكَاةِ, and you give your zakat. وَمُوَاسَاتُ الْأَخْوَانِ, and you are there in solidarity of your brethren. وَالْأَمْرُ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَالنَّهِي عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ, and then the other sign is of a Shi'i, of a true Shi'i, is that you do أمر بالمعروف والنهي عن المنكر. Then we know that there are different levels of الأمر بالمعروف والنهي عن المنكر. We know that there are conditions as well. You know, we're not going to go into the details of the conditions, and someone says, well, that's not a right way of doing amr bil ma'ruf wa nahi an munkar, that's not how you should do it, that's not this, that's not. Why be negative about al amr bil ma'ruf wa nahi an munkar? You need to be positive about al amr bil ma'ruf wa nahi an munkar. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams, hear the children's screams.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind, a momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters, 7300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iransat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.